Welcome to Ink and Peat, where memoir and Ireland share the stage. We talk with authors, guides, ghostwriters, and other free spirits drawn to memoir or enchanted by Ireland. I'm Barb Robitaille.
And I'm Craig Stewart.
Fear, I came to understand this in writing Fearless Writing, because the core idea behind Fearless Writing is you don't need to care what anybody thinks about your stuff. I realized fear is just a story about the future. And so writing asks you to be present, just be present.
William Knauer is a prolific writer, a writer's writer, author of two books for writers, novelist, essayist, writer's life coach, teacher, editor-in-chief of Author Magazine, podcast host of Author to Author. Bill has lived and examined all sides of the writer's life. In his thoughtful book, Fearless Writing, Bill explains to both beginning writers and seasoned pros the benefits of and the need for writing fearlessly, and offers his views on how it's about more than the writing. In episode 17 of Ink and Peat, Bill shares his experience with and enthusiasm for turning the three-dimensional world and our relationship to the five senses into the written word.
What a treat to speak with Bill Knauer today. He's got so much to say about writing.
He does.
And boy, his enthusiasm is contagious. Can I use that word right now?
No, really. Careful there.
Yeah, I know.
Infectious? Do. No.
No. Anyway, my goodness. He just hits the nail on the head for me about writing, fearless writing. We talked about his book, Fearless Writing. And I think there's something in it for everyone, whether you're just beginning to write or whether you've written the great American novel.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It is about, in a sense, it's almost a mindfulness approach to writing. And of course, if that's what you're bringing to your writing, that presence, that also extends into your life. So it's about more than writing. It's a way of being.
Absolutely. Yeah. The problem is we only had a half hour. So I'm not going to talk anymore. He's got so much good to say. I would say you might want to hear this more than once.
I can't wait to listen again. There's so much here for our listeners today. Yes. So I think we jump right in. It's time to put the kettle on and have a listen to Bill Knauer.
Bill, great to have you on Ink and Peat today. Thank you for joining us.
Oh, you're very welcome. Thanks for having me on, Craig.
You know, fearless writing is quite a concept, and you wrote a book called Fearless Writing. I think a lot of our listeners will be really keen on learning about. Tell us, what is fearless writing?
Well, fearless writing is a book about the psychological challenges writers face, not the craft challenges, which are many. And I want to encourage all, if you're listeners are writers, I want to encourage your listeners to master the craft. It's fun. I actually enjoy the craft. I have been a student of it since I was a teenager, and I think it's very important. But the nature of craft is such that it's, I liken it to the times tables, that when you learn them, you kind of learn them. And if maybe you stop using them because you're using but then it'll come back. Same thing is true about the power of nouns and verbs over adjectives and adverbs, and about the sort of things you do in dialogue and don't do. There's so many different craft things we can learn about plotting. But the psychological challenges, which are a challenge of confidence, something you have to, the broad term, but I'll call it confidence, which is, I would say, your inherent fearlessness, that what you actually are at your core, that's something you have to find every time you sit down to write. And it really doesn't matter how experienced you are. It doesn't matter how many books you published, if you published in the New York Times, if you've been well-reviewed, if you've won the Pulitzer Prize. It really doesn't matter. No accomplishment can inoculate you against fear. And I believe, and the reason I'm the editor of Author Magazine, and I host Author to Author, it's my podcast, and one of my books is Write Within Yourself, an Author's Companion, is that I think that the challenge of being an author, not a writer, which is if your listeners are just wanted to write in their diaries, they wouldn't be listening to you, I don't think. I assume they want to share their work with other people. That as soon as you start sharing your work with other people, that's where the trouble starts. And that's usually what I'm talking to my guests about, whether they know it or not, is how do you forget about the reader, even though the reader, whether they're the reader as an editor, agent, or just someone buying the book, their response seems so important. The central fear all writers face is that other people's opinion of their work matters more than their own opinion, that all the power lies out there, that until someone likes your stuff and whether someone really determines your fate. And what fearless writing is about, which is really the truth that every writer knows whether they've articulated or not. Maybe the only difference between me and a lot of other writers that I know is that I've thought about it and thought about how to articulate it, is that in order to write something worth sharing with another person, that another person would like and want to read, you have to forget about pleasing that person. You have to forget that anyone's going to read it. You have to go deeply within yourself to that part of yourself that is only interested in something for the sake of being interested in it. Telling the story because you want to tell the story, because you want to write the poem, not because anyone else is going to like it, just because you like it. When you go deep into that and forget about the reader, forget whether anybody likes it or not, that's you accessing your actual inherent genius, and that's where it comes from. But you have to do that every time you sit down to write. Every time you sit down to write, you have to forget about the fact that people are going to read it. People are going to read it, and you have no control over what they think of it. And that is the constant challenge writers face. And it's also the source, I think, of our greatest growth as human beings while writing, and probably, in regardless of what you write, helps you access something deeper within your work, whether you realize that balance is being learned or not.
Yeah, well done. Many of our listeners are writers who are just beginning, and many of our listeners have been published. So you're speaking to the choir here.
Right.
Now, it seems like you may have come across this idea of fearless writing through your own experience.
Oh, very much. Absolutely. Yeah, I mean, and you know, I didn't call it fearless writing. I just was writing about what it feels like to doubt yourself, what it feels like to think you're no good, think you don't have what it takes. And also, I got interested in, there's a chapter in the book. Here, I'm going to do, this is called Marketing, Craig.
I love it. Ready? I love it. Bring it on.
This is one book, but this is the book he's talking about. Fearless Writing. There it is.
There it is.
But I was actually writing these essays that were in that, or some of them. And I wrote about, there's a chapter in Fearless Writing called The Flow. You know, I'm not the first to use that term, but I still think it's the best term to describe what you get into when you forget to care about people and you just get lost within the stream of the story. I got interested in what's happening. Like, what is happening there? What's going on? I decline the explanation that it's some capricious muse who has decided to visit you today, and that nothing I do has any effect over whether I get into that zone where stuff comes to me, where I feel creative, where it's easy. That's the secret that writers don't like to share, that when you're in that zone, it's actually easy when you're in it. Maybe it's not easy to get in, but I decline the explanation that I have no role in whether I'm in it or not. And so I got curious. What brings me into that zone and what kicks me out of it? And the things I landed on as I wrote about it and thought about it, and by the way, just thought about it, just paced around my backyard because I got so interested in what is this about? Because it's about more than writing, but I'm going to think about it in terms of writing. It's about more than writing, which is I need to be interested in something, like just authentically curious about it. When I rest my attention on it, it feels good. It requires no effort. Unlike when I have made myself like do my taxes, like I can do it, you know, but I don't look forward to it. But once I'm writing, I'm in that zone. It doesn't require any effort to lay my attention on the thing I'm writing. And that's a big distinction. Because as an adult, which you and I both are, we've had to teach ourselves to say, pay attention to this. You got to do it now. It's got to be done. And some adults spend their whole life doing that. And writing says, no, that's not how you do it. You find the thing that you pay attention to that requires no effort. That's the thing you do. So that was the first sort of clue. And the other one was, every time I think about other people's opinion of my stuff, I'm out of the flow. Boom. Instant spat out of that zone. You can't do it. You can either pay attention to your story or what other people think of it. Your choice, but you can't do both. And I said, well, that's interesting. Oh, I see. When I'm feeling bad, it's not because I'm a bad writer. It's because I'm not in the flow. I'm trying to read other people's minds and I can't do that. Or I'm trying to write a story that I don't want to write. Or I'm trying to write it in a way I don't want to write. Or I'm judging it. I'm judging it is not good enough, even though I kind of want to write it. All those things can contribute to why I feel bad. And I do not like to feel bad. You know, at any time in my life, I would always rather feel good. And so that was really the driving force. What's going on? And I was surprised, but I was as interested as to what is happening in the flow as I was the novels I was trying to make myself write at that time. I don't do novels anymore. And I started writing about being in that state of mind, and I found it compelling and revealing, and I could make it entertaining, I found, if I wrote about a certain way. And that's how I did it. I just, you know, I followed what I found so compelling and what I really needed to learn myself. Like, I needed to get this. Because I knew how to write, Craig. I knew I had the skill, and yet I was not having success. And I was like, what is going on? I know it's not, because I've been doing this forever. And I would get close, and we'd get so close. But I was like, there's something I'm missing, and this was it. This was what I was missing.
Nice. Well, as one who's benefited from your book, Fearless Writing, I would say that's what I needed to read and what I needed to hear at the time. One of the things you just mentioned that really strikes me is that this is more than writing. You say this is more than writing. Yeah. And when I read a lot of your work and listen to your interviews, it seems like you're approaching it from almost a metaphysical place. Is that, would you say that's accurate?
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. In fact, I never wanted to teach writing or write about writing. You know, that wasn't my interest, but I started looking at writing and I was kind of interested in metaphysical things, philosophical, spiritual things, but I saw writing as I had an opportunity to write to writers. You know, that was an opportunity that was given to me. I said, okay, well, I've got an audience. How could I talk to them about the things I'm interested in, not knowing what they're interested in? And so I translated my own beliefs, I don't even call it beliefsism, but my understanding of experiences I've had into the writing experience. Because what's going on? You know, the thing about writers is so interesting is, what's going on? Like, why you say you listen to your characters, but they're not there, you're there, but you're listening to them. I mean, to say you're making them do stuff, that's rarely do I know a writer who describes it that way. And every writer I know who describes ideas, the ideas came to them. They didn't go get them. Oh, where's that idea? No, they like, it's there. Okay, good. Well, what's happening? Because we all use that language and it's the only accurate description. We're trying to be accurate. It came to me. So where's it coming from? What is the frame of mind I need to be in to allow it to come to me? And I started speaking this way to people and I started realizing, God, my language is overlapping with biblical language, even though I don't, it wasn't a biblical guy myself. But I noticed there was some language around trust and like, don't doubt, thou shalt not doubt and do not judge and all this kind of stuff. And also someone I was talking once and someone said, you're a Buddhist. And I said, well, okay, I'll go with that. I'm not. I mean, I've never studied Buddhism, but they said, everything you're saying, it's Buddhism. I said, well, I'm just translating what is happening to me and what I have to do in order for it to happen. And every writer, whether they like it or not, you know, I remember talking to this one writer, Andre Debuse. I really love Andre. And he said, you know, I don't want to get too woo-woo. I wanted to say, too late. You're writing. Writing is so woo-woo, whether you like it or not. Uh-huh. Whether you want to call it the muse or God or spirits or your imagination, whatever the language, doesn't matter. There's something you're in. And in fact, I didn't really understood writing when I saw it as a relationship and not something I'm doing. Like, I'm in a relationship with whatever you want to call it. And I have a role and it has a role. And my job is to be open, is to be curious, is to show up and not try to have all the answers. And it does the rest. Well, that sounds a lot like a lot of spiritual teachers you hear talking about all the different things. Well, and you know, and think of it, it makes sense because just because you're writing, you're not stopping being a human being. It's not like you're not alive and life is creative. Writing is like, in fact, you know, if you listen to my podcast, I always say what it takes to write the book you want to write is what it takes to lead the life you want to lead. Well, the writer faces a blank page and they have to decide what goes on that blank page. There's no right answer. There's no right answer to what's on the blank page. Your blank page should be filled differently than mine. Well, there's no right answer for your life. Your life is different than mine. There's no right answer. The way you find the right answer for the story you want to tell is the same way you find the right answer for the life you want to lead. So the two things, there's just a delect. And in fact, of all the subjects I can write about, and I've written about parenting, and that's been, that was gratifying. But it's harder to write about parenting and make it about life and not just about parenting than it is to write about writing and have it barely be about writing. It's so easy to have it overlap with just fear and success and love and death and God and all the subjects and ostensibly have it be about writing.
I don't think a half hour is long enough to
I could go a long time on this, believe me.
Oh boy. You know, some of the people that come on our tour, on Memoir Tour, really honestly have not written anything more than a thank you note. And right. they're just dipping their toes into the water. What sure. would you recommend? How would you recommend to these writers to begin approaching their writing fearlessly?
Right. Well, I think you want to start by simply writing as quickly and as quickly as possible and think about it the least. Just think of the thing that is most interesting to you. Don't question why you're interested in it. Think about maybe the stuff you've read that you like the most, that you would like to tell stories that are similar to. But you want to go towards the thing that is most interesting. Don't try to think about what is good and what is saleable and what subject matter is interesting to you. What's the way to approach that? Is it a poem? Is it a story? Is it just a journal? But write as quickly and as thoughtlessly as possible. Don't try to examine whether it's any good or not. Just what's interesting to you and how can you share why it's interesting? You know, it's a funny thing. It's just starting writing is one of the things that is the most challenging for me to teach. Usually when I'm teaching people who have begun but are struggling. And I understand that. I started writing so young. I was too young to even know I was starting anything. I was just like, I was starting everything. I was starting wiffle ball. I was starting school. I was starting writing. You know, it was interesting. Mm-hmm. But I would say to your writers, if they're grown-ups, which they probably are, that they have got a lot of ideas about writing. They've got a lot of ideas about what it means to be a writer, all of which are wrong, I can assure you. All that writers are people who really like to write. And that's what they like to do. They enjoy the experience of translating a three-dimensional, five-sensory experience into thought. That's what they like to do. And because that's all writing is. It's just thought on page. So allow yourself to think, what's really interesting to me? What are the kind of stories I love? What are the ideas I love? I would say keep a journal if you could do that. I think where I began to really learn to write was when I began to write very fast as a young man and just let stuff just pour out of me. I thought, I'm not going to share this stuff, but it feels better. It feels more creative than the stuff I'm crafting and honing, you know, and because I'm tapping into something and letting it rip, which is really, and this is the tricky thing for your listeners who are beginners is, you know, a vacuum cleaner, you know how to vacuum. You move it around, you push this button and you move it back and forth in the rug. This is a metaphor I'm borrowing from someone else. I don't want to take credit for this one. But if that vacuum isn't plugged in, it doesn't matter how well you move your vacuum. Nothing's going to happen. You have to get plugged in as a writer. And the way you get plugged in is by getting excited and enthusiastic and curious. What are you interested in? So I would say the one thing to your listeners, your job as a writer is not to have the answer. Your job is to have a question. Your job is to have a question, not an answer. In school, smart kids have answers. In writing and in life, smart people, quote unquote, have questions. What's the question? What's the thing you want to learn about? Because I don't write about anything that I have the answer to already. It's boring to me. I write to discover. So you're just supposed to be curious about something. You know, sometimes people, that's why a lot of fiction starts with, what if, you know, what if I could fly? What if a man had superpowers? What if this, you know, that's sort of where it begins because it starts with the question. But often we have a character in mind. We don't know anything about them. Well, who are they? Where do they work? With? You have all these questions. Your job is to have questions. And even if you're wanting to write about your own life, which is what I write about now, I say, well, I want to write about that time I got into that spat with my friend. What happened? What was I thinking? Why did I get into that spat? What was really learned from that? And how would I share that? How would I share what I learned? It's always the questions that are important, not the answers. So I guess if anything else, know that. You're just supposed to have questions. And a lot of adults think they're supposed to have answers. You're not. As a writer, once you've got the answer, it's done. That's when you're done. Yeah. That's not where you start.
Let's talk a little bit about, thank you for that, by the way. That's very helpful. Let's talk a little bit about the self-critic that may sort of, if I could just get that look of, you know, a lot of people, part of the fear comes from having someone criticize their writing or feeling that they're not able to say what they want to say or saying something that they're afraid someone is going to slam. And so your self-critic goes, oh, no.
Right.
So talk about self-critic.
So, you know, the self-critic is there to protect you. You're going to criticize yourself first before anybody else does it, right? One thing you want, what you want to do is, so here's the way I have dealt with the self-critic in terms of, it's the question thing. And there's a chapter in my book about, there's only two questions writers should ever be asking themselves. And the first question is, what do I want to say? And that is a huge question. That's, what's the story I want to tell? How do I want to tell it? That's all the questions of what's going to happen next. Even again, when I write about my own life, I have to decide like, well, what, because there's a lot that happened in my life. I have to choose just the little tiny part of it I want to tell. And then how do I say it? What's the right word? What's the, you know, all these questions. So that's all the writing, but that's only the first question. And the second question, this is where the critic comes in. The second question is, have I said it? Or is what I've written accurate? So in other words, if you're writing something, the thing you're writing about exists first in a realm only you can perceive, right? It exists in your mind and only you can see it. And only you know if you have translated it accurately onto the page. Is what's on the page as cool and funny and profound and sexy and interesting as it was in my mind? And it is, and it might not be, and often it isn't. You go, that's not it. So you rewrite. Is it accurate? Because you can answer that question. You can read it and see. But it also keeps you from answering the question or asking the question, is this any good? Okay. Is it any good? Because all that another person can say is this. Here's all, because you know how, one of the cardinal rules of writing is show, don't tell. Show, don't tell. And showing is basically this. It's like, look, forgiveness. I'm writing about forgiveness. There it is. There's forgiveness. Do you see it? Because I can't touch it. I can't do it, right? I can't touch it in you. I can only point at it. There it is. You see, because it, just like in humor, this comedian starts the joke, the audience finishes it. The laughter is them completing the thought. The writer leaves stuff out. They leave out what the audience brings in. I don't say, John was angry. John was the angriest guy you'd ever meet. He was so, so angry. Trust me, he was really angry. No, I say, John came into the room, threw off his coat, looked around, said, does nobody clean up this place but me? I never say the word angry, but I trust that the reader will say, oh, he's angry. I'm showing you anger. But sometimes I show you something and the reader says, I don't see it. You're pointing at funny, but I'm not laughing. You're pointing at profound, but I don't see it. And sometimes they'll be kind and say, you know, I don't understand why the character's angry. I don't understand why they're behaving that way. Or sometimes they'll say, this stinks. Sometimes they'll say, you don't know how to write. I was told, you don't know how to write. You should let other people write things and you just make them up once when I was young. And all they meant was, you're saying stuff, but I don't see it. I don't see it. And so the critic, the inner critic, is the part of you trying to protect yourself from the experience of someone not getting you, not understanding you. It's okay not to be understood. Sometimes you haven't pointed clearly enough. And sometimes that person will not understand that idea because of the life they've led. There are certain jokes that some people won't get because they do not understand the reference. If they've never had a cat, there are certain cat jokes. If you've never had a cat, that joke won't make any sense to you. And I have to accept that in my own writing. I try to embrace as enough people as possible. But interestingly, this book, I had a bunch of fans of this book. But when people didn't like it on Amazon, weren't many, but sometimes they wouldn't, they would always say the same thing. He didn't say anything. You people all like this book, but he never said anything. He just doesn't say anything. I don't get it. I don't get it. He's not saying anything. Well, I was. But I was trying to point, and I was trying to leave room, and for whatever reason, they couldn't see what I was pointing at. No fault of them. I don't really think fault of me either. I did the best I could. Does that make sense? Because that's really all the critic is saying. I don't get it. So try to say, is it accurate? Is it accurate? Is this as cool as I can see? And then you got to leave it. And hopefully a good editor, I'm an editor also, and I've had some good editors, all they do is ask questions. Why is this? Why is that? Why is this? Why is that? Oh. And there were things in Fearless Writing where my editor said, I don't get this. And my first response was, well, I wrote it in English. How hard is it? And I go, okay, well, you know, all right, fine. And I went back and I thought, I said, oh, I got a better way I can say it. Ah, good. Okay. And I felt it got clearer just because she didn't understand what I thought was so clear at first. You see, that's a good editor. No, good critic.
Exactly. I mean, there's nothing like a good editor to.
But again, it's questions. Yeah. A good editor will not tell you how to finish your story. A good editor, because they know they can't do it. But a good editor will ask questions. And that's what I'll try. I hope I'm a good editor. When I get pieces, sometimes I'll say, you seem interested in that briefcase your teacher was carrying, but you never mentioned it again, but you seem really interested in it. I feel like, why are you either, you either got to get rid of it or tell me why you're so interested in it. I remember I did that with, and she, lo and behold, became a big part of the story. I just asked a question that seemed bright to me, but I didn't try to answer it. I let her do that.
I'm going to keep that in mind when I...
Yeah, it's good to remember that yeah. And really, because I've had some nasty things said about me on the internet, because I'm on the internet, and sometimes, and mostly people are kind to me because I try to inspire people, but that's all they're really saying is, I don't get it. Mm. I don't get what you're about, and I don't like that experience. You know, it's like being in a room and everybody laughs but you.
Yeah.
Temptation is to think, well, either there's something wrong with me, but maybe there's something wrong with all these people. You know, instead of just... there's nothing wrong with anybody. The temptation is to want to blame someone for that.
Yeah. I usually find that I'm the only person in the room laughing, which is, that's a little unsettling.
Okay, but now it makes you feel kind of like, my nuts. Maybe no one, it's a good point, Craig, because if that happens and you write and you hold that in your head, you have to let that go. Cause that tells you, if you really believe that, that makes you think, well, no one understands me. No one will ever get my jokes. You can't believe that. You have to believe that, you know, I can do this so that they can get it. I can do it in a way that some of them will get it, right? You don't want to believe that no one ever, because I used to believe that. No one understands me. Oh, they do.
One question about trust. You talk about trust and trusting that the feeling you have is enough. And I think for beginning writers or even pros, you know, that trust is huge. And I love that you talk about that. What would you say about trust?
Well, in other words, you know, eventually once you start having publishing success, right? And so you have this experience of saying, going from having this little idea in your head to turning it into something complete, to someone saying, this is, oh, I like this, to putting it out to strangers reading and saying, I like this. You know, until you've had that trajectory, it's hard to understand that just the little idea can lead to that, right? And so there's a belief around writing like, well, until it's been published and people like it, blah, 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 we don't know if this idea is worth my attention, right? The thing you have to accept and trust, and it's harder as a beginning writer because you don't have evidence yet that it will lead somewhere. You have to trust that the feeling of being interested in something, the feeling of being excited by something, of being moved by your own ideas, which is very normal to be writing something and get moved by it because you're really hot on something, that's enough. You don't need to know more than that. You don't need to know whether people are going to like it. You don't need to know where it's going. A lot of the things we do as adults, we feel like, well, I got this job or I got this degree, and that degree will lead to these kinds of work. And I know I can make this amount of money, which means I can pay this mortgage. And blah, blah, blah. With writing this, all you really know at first, especially, is I'm interested in this idea. Like, that's it. I'm interested in writing. That's it. I'm learning. That I like the learning. That's all you know. And you don't get to know where it's going. It will go somewhere. But it'll go there quicker if you allow the being interested in the story and just in writing itself to be enough. And that requires trust. It requires no guarantees about the future. Stuff will come, but the more you, and I have spent a lot of time looking, trying to, you know, look into my crystal ball, even though I didn't have any other options open to me. I mean, I did have other options, but I wasn't interested in them. I wanted to know, like, okay, I'm starting the story. It's got to take me to the promised land, you know? And that slowed things down, actually. And so I know it's tough, but all that writing is doing with that asking you to trust your interest in the present moment with whatever you're doing is revealing a truth about life anyway. You don't ever know the future anyway. You don't know. Fear, I came to understand this in writing Fearless Writing, because the core idea behind Fearless Writing is you don't need to care what anybody thinks about your stuff. That's the sort of core idea. And everything I wrote kind of revolved around that. Well, what other people think of your stuff always exists in the future, because it can't be in the present, because that's when you're writing it, right? And I realized fear is just a story about the future. It's always, and it could be in 3 minutes or 3 days or 3 years, but it's what you think is going to happen, not what's happening. It's your pain is a judgment about what is happening. That's different. Pain is a judgment on the present. And fear is a story about the future. Shame's a story about the past. But fear is a story about the future. And that's what's happening. You're thinking about the future and you're telling a story about it and it's scaring you. It's scaring you. What if I write this and it doesn't go, I'm a failure. Oh, failure. What if it just leads nowhere? What if I learn I'm not good enough? I'm not smart enough. What if? And it's all in the future. And so writing asks you to be present. Just be present. That's where all creation happens. That's where you are anyway. And that's where all your success, whatever that is, will be grown. And it calls you to that moment in a way that a lot of other things don't demand of you. But it really says, no, you got it. You can't do this and try to look into the future. You'll drive yourself mad. You got to be present. And that's what trust is. This is enough.
Well said. And something to really embrace as you sit down to your keyboard or your notepad.
It feels great. Oh, by the way, the flow state, and all, if any of your listeners have any interest in writing, they have had that experience. They've probably had that experience. That is what life feels like when you stop caring what people think about you and the things you've done, and you stop projecting into the future, and you stop regretting the past. That's what life feels like. That's reality. But we are so rarely in reality in that way. But that is actually when you drop all that crap, that's what life is. That's what life leaves you with. And it seems remarkable, but it's only because we spend so much time with our minds drifting around and judging and wondering and worrying. But when you just drop into the creative flow of life, which is what life is, it feels great. And that's why so many people are drawn to writing, because they get into that flow and they go, God, that was great. Wow. What do I do with that about that? You know, yeah. It seems different than what happened out there. Different enough that maybe it wasn't real, but it is. I think it is reality. It is reality in its deepest sense.
That's lovely to come to the end of our current present. Oh, Bill, thank you so much. I've got a couple of just stock questions for you.
Sure.
First of all, what are you reading? What's on your nightstand?
Well, so I do a lot of these interviews, and so I kind of read whatever. I do one a week plus one a month, so it's kind of whatever, you know, I try to keep up with and have a sense. So I do that. That's just my job. My wife and I do a lot of, and I write so much every day that I'm actually not that interested in reading a lot. I know it sounds, but I really am not. I'm like kind of done with that. My wife and I are nice. Reading the Emperor's Handbook, which is Marcus Aurelius's meditations. And we're also reading this thing, Pema Chodron. I've never read Pema, I don't know how first name is actually pronounced. My wife and I have been debating that. But she bought a little, the pocket Pema Chodron. We've been reading that together. And I like that. I've always been drawn to Pema Chodron, but I've not actually read her stuff. But I've heard great things. So we're doing that right now. So that's kind of, I guess that would be what's on our nightstand at the moment.
Yeah, I can totally relate to the reading bit. Like when you spend your whole day.
I'm kind of done, I got to say. I mean, I'll read like articles online, but it's like, man, I just need to play music or something right now. This is enough.
Exactly. Then when can you think of a time where you found joy when you least expected it?
Least expected it. You told me that's one of the questions you asked, and I was thinking about that. And I think that the way I've come to understand joy is sort of the way I was describing the flow, which is, it's really always there if I would just stop resisting what is happening. So I like I mentioned earlier, like, you got to pay your taxes. Well, I had to pay my taxes. And when I pay my taxes, I actually owe, like I'm self-employed, so I'm not getting anything back. It means thousands of dollars going up. Well, there's a lot to not enjoy about that. Not just the money, I don't care. But just the act, it's like getting it wrong and I worry. But if I drop that and kind of get into the puzzle of it, the sort of learning of it, because I like to use my mind and figure stuff out, I enjoyed it. Once I stopped judging it, once I stopped saying, I don't want to do this, I wish I didn't have to spend my Saturday doing, I did this a while ago, but it's a good example of something that seems to have no benefit to it, really, just something, it's like a medicine I have to take. But if I drop all that, I mean, joy might be too strong a word, but I was enjoying it, if I would admit it. I don't want to do it every day, like once a year is enough.
Yeah.
But that's just the pure learning of it. And every time I figured out something I had not figured out the year before, I was pretty pleased with myself. Like, oh, look, I got that. I did. So nice. I think joy is available all the time, but certain circumstances require greater focus on our part to drop the sort of easy story we have about why there can't be joy here. And I'm not going to say I experience it all the time. I don't. But it's always there. It's all in the smallest of moments and in the biggest of moments. And so I think that's my, it's a bit of a cheat of an answer, but that's really
how I... No, not at all. Not in the slightest. No. And I've enjoyed talking with you, Bill. So good. Thank you very much for being on Incompete. And people can find your book on Amazon, I assume.
For sure. I mean, if they went to a bookstore, they could probably find it there.
Yeah.
Bookstore is open.
Not right.
But yeah, probably Amazon and, you know, Barnes and Noble and blah, 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 you know, the online retailers are probably the easiest.
And williamknauer.com is your website.
Yeah, I go by William. That's my professional name, but I'm Bill to anybody who just talks to me.
All right.
Yeah, williamknauer.com. You know, I am a writing coach. So I coach people on the craft. I help them, but I also deal with a lot. I'm like a life coach for writers. So I deal with both ends of it. So people want to work.
Oh, nice. That's lovely. Yeah, yeah.
I teach classes and stuff. So you want to learn about me, you can go to williamknauer.com and it's all there.
Brilliant. Well, you've given us a lot to think about and to go forward fearlessly. Thank you, Bill.
You're very welcome.
We'll
Good
be
luck,
in touch.
Everybody.
Thanks for listening to Ink and Pete, a production of Memoir Tours Ireland.
For more information on Memoir Tours, visit memoirtours.com.
Until next time, may you find joy where you least expect it.